Welcome to the Green Alliance podcast. We're the charity and think tank that is all about achieving ambitious leadership for the environment. I'm Katerina Brandmeier, Head of Climate Policy at Green Alliance. In this week's episode, we're talking about aviation.
I think it's very hard for anyone to know with certainty how much aviation is going to be sustainable in a net zero future.
Meeting the government's 2050 net zero emissions target will bring about changes across all parts of the economy, including to the way we travel. Transport is currently the biggest emitting sector in the UK, responsible for almost one third of the country's emissions. And getting the sector to net zero will need a whole range of solutions, including accelerating the uptake of electric vehicles to replace petrol and diesel ones, encouraging people to get out of their cars to take public transport, walk and cycle more, as well as take trains for longer journeys. But one area that might seem harder to decarbonize is aviation. And to find out more about what the net zero means for this part of the transport sector, I'm joined by Kate Hewitt, who is Deputy Director at the Aviation Environment Federation, a not-for-profit campaigning organization working on the environmental impact of aviation. Thank you very much for joining us, Kate.
Good to be here.
Could you tell us a bit about the climate impact of aviation?
There was a report in 2019 for the CCC on behaviour change that put it this way. Flying is a uniquely high-impact activity and is the quickest and cheapest way for a consumer to increase their carbon footprint. On an individual level, flying is one of the most carbon intensive things that we can do. The climate benefits of giving up driving or switching to a vegan diet, for example, while they're really good things to do, those can be wiped out by taking just one long haul return flight per year. Before the pandemic, aviation emissions globally were growing. The UK saw a record year in terms of aviation emissions. And at that point, they represented about 9% of the total emissions from the UK. And that's a proportion that's set to rise as other sectors decarbonise. And the other thing that's really important for us to keep in mind, it's likely to be a kind of growing conversation, is that flying has other damaging impacts on the climate as well as CO2, like the contrails that you see sometimes visibly in the sky. The latest science tells us that aviation's total climate impact is about three times that associated with CO2 alone.
Thank you. That's a very useful overview, and interesting, particularly to think about those non-CO2 impacts. They seem like they might be overlooked generally. So what are some of the main options to reduce the climate impact of flying?
So there are currently no zero carbon planes. There are no zero carbon fuels. You can get potentially some operational efficiencies from more direct routing, you know, higher load factors, that kind of thing. We're not likely to see much, if any, electric or hydrogen powered flight in commercial operation before 2050, except for the very small planes on short routes, basically. There are some markets, particular markets, the Scottish Highlands or kind of crossing the fjords in Norway, where it might make sense to use electric aircraft, but they're very unlikely to be doing the sort of longer haul routes for many decades. So there are probably only two options, really, if we want to continue flying. And those are either zero carbon fuels or significant amounts of carbon removals alongside those kind of measures to tackle non-CO2 impacts that we refer to. At the moment, neither of those things are happening. We haven't got zero carbon fuels and we're not actually capturing and storing carbon. These are technologies that are theoretically possible, but they're likely to be very expensive and they're likely to be difficult, frankly, to deliver. And because of that, we should also, we argue, be planning for a future of less flying. So continuing to use Zoom for business meetings, you know, focusing on domestic and near European destinations for tourism, and definitely not expanding our airports.
What are some of the measures that can be put in place to incentivize this kind of alternative behaviors?
There's a whole conversation that hasn't really happened, I think, about tourism and building a kind of more sustainable tourism policy. That's an area that I think is really interesting, particularly kind of post-pandemic, when people have been thinking for other reasons, you know, about more local holidays. And there are some advantages to that. And there are also some challenges in terms of costs and kind of over tourism of the best known locations. But wouldn't it be interesting to see if some of those people currently selling package holidays were asked to, okay, let's rebrand some of these lesser known sort of UK destinations or some of these places that you could reach by coach or rail within Europe and try and make those more attractive. There are potentially also tax measures, it has to be said, that aviation as a sector hasn't covered, we think, its environmental costs historically. And if that started to happen, maybe people will get a more realistic idea of what's the environmental impact of taking this trip.
There was a report published by the Public Accounts Committee, which really has made clear the fact that government should be thinking about using also the tax system in a way that really drives the transition towards net zero. And I think also Green Alliance, as part of our Transform Tax project, we are calling for a rethink of the tax system to make sure that it really incentivizes the right behaviors and helps people move away instead from more polluting ones.
Yeah, I mean, aviation as historically is exempt from fuel duty. For international travel, there's no VAT charged on tickets. The tax that we do have, air passenger duty, is relatively small compared to, you know, what the sector could be paying if some of those costs were internalised. And I think it's going to be one of the important questions going forward is how we actually make sure that the sector itself is covering the cost of its own decarbonisation.
Absolutely. And going back to the point around zero emission fuel, so we do hear government referring to sustainable aviation fuels as their solution to decarbonizing transport. It sounds from what you were saying that those technologies will take a long time to really be taken up at scale. How can government make sure that there is investment and uptake of these new solutions?
Yeah, I mean, the industry has been talking about sustainable aviation fuels for decades. I mean, the reality is that they accounted for less than 0.02% of total fuel use in 2019. I think there are various problems. At the moment, the fuels that we have currently available are already 2 to 3 times the cost of kerosene. As I've said, there's no real incentives on the sector at the moment to pay that extra cost because they haven't had climate obligations in the way that some other sectors have. It's also hard to scale up some of these fuels sustainably. So we've moved away from crop-based biofuels because of potential biodiversity impacts and then problems of competition with agriculture and forestry. And so there's much more focus now on using waste for alternative fuels for aircraft. That comes with its own set of problems, you know, because the emissions from waste are ones that we really need to be reducing anyway. And, you know, it's necessarily limited in supply. It's not the case that we can simply just, you know, put a bit more money in or create an obligation for aviation and then straightforwardly be able to kind of ramp up this technology. I mean, most SAFs, as they're called, that are currently available, they operate really like offsets, like carbon offsets. So they don't actually reduce the CO2 coming out of the back of a plane. They just reduce or avoid emissions from elsewhere in the economy. You know, in a net zero future, all sectors are going to have to be getting to zero emissions. So that's not going to be good enough. We need to be thinking about moving towards zero carbon or net zero carbon fuel for aircraft. It is scientifically possible to capture CO2 from the air and combine that with water to turn it into a liquid fuel for aircraft. So it's something that needs to be looked at very much from a sort of whole economy perspective, I suppose.
And is government, what kind of steps is it taking at the moment to try and at least promote this kind of technology, knowing that it will take potentially quite a long time to be really rolled out?
I think the government's been cautious. In some ways, you could argue rightly cautious about incentivizing certainly use of biofuels for aircraft at the moment. There is, in theory, some sort of financial incentive for using these kind of renewable fuels under the RTFO, the Renewable Transport Fuels Obligation. But it's very small scale at the moment. You know, until now, we really haven't had a climate policy for aviation in the UK. There just hasn't been very much detailed discussion about what should the government be doing about this. That's something that we expect to see a lot more of. We're anticipating two things: that the government's going to consult on its net zero strategy for aviation, we think, this side of the summer, and potentially also introduce a mandate on airlines for using sustainable aviation fuels. That's a debate that's been driven, I think, very much by the airlines at the moment, because in the near future, using these sort of waste-based biofuels is one of the few things that they can see how to do, I suppose, in terms of reducing the climate impact of their operations. But I think there are going to be lots of nuances, put it that way, for us to dig into quite carefully in terms of thinking about the overall sustainability of some of these fuels.
Absolutely. You mentioned greenhouse gas removals a bit earlier.
Yeah.
What kind of role will they play in decarbonizing the industry? I think if I remember correctly, the Climate Change Committee expects that there will be some residual emissions from aviation in 2050. We are expecting, therefore, that greenhouse gas removals will help to ensure that the sector achieves net zero. Can you say a bit more about that?
Yeah, almost every scenario for net zero aviation assumes some level of greenhouse gas removals, because as an industry, it is so far at the moment from having the technologies that would be necessary to roll out this side of 2050. So I think even people who are very kind of sceptical about the potential role of greenhouse gas removals across the economy will nevertheless say, to the extent that we've got these things, it's going to be aviation and maybe agriculture that need to make use of the removals that we do have available. So the CCC is currently anticipating in its modelling around 23 million tonnes still of emissions from aviation in 2050, which would need to be balanced by removals. It does feel as though greenhouse gas removals is very attractive on paper, that they tend to be kind of just assumed that they will somehow materialise in order to mop up whatever emissions are left over after you've done everything you can in terms of fuels and efficiencies and that kind of thing. I mean, obviously, the reality is the UK has not delivered carbon capture and storage. We also don't know at the moment who would really be responsible for making the investments in these things for a sector like aviation. You know, are we going to ask the airlines to invest in greenhouse gas removals, or is that going to be for the government? Are we really going to have enough of these removals available that, you know, we don't need to worry so much about leftover emissions by 2050? I think there are lots of questions still to be asked about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a few points here which are useful to emphasize. Carbon removals shouldn't be in place of reducing emissions in the first, sort of mitigating emissions. So I think making sure that as the industry moves towards net zero, they reduce emissions as much as possible. But it's also a matter of, as you were saying, sort of delivering the technology and scaling up those carbon removals. And I think there one aspect that Green Alliance has looked at in the past, which I think is particularly relevant in this discussion, is the fact that there will be potentially limited capacity for greenhouse gas removal. And it's a matter of ensuring that it's allocated fairly across the sectors that will need it. And also making sure that, in fact, for example, we are not allowing sectors that potentially are more in a position to invest in new technologies to instead buy up cheaper carbon removals that might be about sort of planting trees, but instead they actually are incentivized to sort of invest much more in actually developing the technology for the longer term. So I think it sounds like there is a need also for a governance around greenhouse gas removals to make sure that they're really targeted and scaled up where appropriately.
Yeah, I think that the sort of equity question is a very relevant one for aviation, given that the amount that people fly is quite closely related to people's income. You know, about half the flights in the UK are taken by 10% of the population, something like that. Equally, about half of us in any given year don't fly at all. how many of these flights really need to happen? Is this a sector that should be prioritised in the economy? And yes, I mean, in terms of tree planting, I think people understand the idea of planting trees, and that's a very popular measure, you know, compared to something like CCS that the public's quite suspicious about. But, you know, if we're talking about just from aviation, 23 million tonnes annually every year being emitted, potentially, even by 2050, you know, we can't keep planting trees every year at a, you know, ever increasing rates. It's going to be one of the really important questions is how do we actually get over the cost and other barriers of more long lasting carbon removals?
So last week, the government announced that it plans to include international aviation and shipping in its sixth carbon budget. So that's the carbon budget between 2033 and 2037. Can you tell us why this is such an important step from government?
Yeah, so they've said that they will include these emissions from the sixth carbon budget, and more generally that they will legislate for international aviation to be part of the UK's net zero law. It's something that environmental campaigners have called for a long time, and that we think is a really significant step in terms of us just being able to have a meaningful kind of policy conversation about aviation. I think it will be a way of helping to hold the industry to account. The aviation sector has been good at expressing its aspirations in terms of carbon reductions, you know, from the sector, not always so good at delivering those. And I think inclusion in carbon budgets will help impose a meaningful limit. You know, there's been debate about, does it make sense to try and deal with these emissions domestically rather than internationally? And the industry has always liked to argue that, well, you know, we're an international sector, so it only international measures should be imposed on us. The reality is, you know, there's no necessary conflict between accounting for these emissions domestically and still continuing to work on measures to tackle them at the international level. We've yet to see whether the UN Aviation Organization will be successful in setting a long-term climate goal for the sector. That discussion is due to take place next year. But the measure that was recently agreed is an offsetting scheme. It is called CORSIA, the Carbon Offsetting and Reduction Scheme for International Aviation. There's not much actual reduction in there. That's something that has a target that's not aligned with Paris. It only requires offsets for emissions above their 2019 levels. Anything below that is not accounted for at all in the scheme. And now, because of the pandemic, airlines are not anticipating returning to 2019 levels until about 2025. We're really pleased that the UK has sort of put down a marker on this issue and said, no, we're going to take this seriously in future.
It's really a significant step, and one that can be rightly, I think, hailed as world leading. Now, thinking about what does this look like in practice, thinking about the recovery post-COVID, the sector obviously has been significantly affected. But now with many calling for a green recovery, what are opportunities, therefore, I think, to rebuild the sector and make sure that it contributes to the transition towards net zero?
We think it's important that the sector in future needs to start paying for its environmental costs, and that really hasn't happened up till now. I think it's very hard for anyone to know with certainty how much aviation is going to be sustainable in a net zero future, but that really should be something for the industry itself to work out. Once they've started telling us, you know, what the costs of decarbonisation will be. Inclusion in carbon budgets and in net zero legislation will help focus that discussion. We have to stop assuming that aviation as an industry must grow. You know, it's a myth that we need aviation growth because of business travel, for example. In fact, business travel had flatlined for at least a decade, even pre-pandemic. And we're seeing lots of big firms now saying that they're not planning to go back to the amount of flying that they were doing before the pandemic. I think as well, it's going to be important to focus on employment in aviation. Jobs per passenger had been falling for some time as a result of just kind of automation in the sector and more low-cost travel. Clearly, it's not sustainable to grow the sector just in order to maintain employment. So I think a kind of specific look at how best to support aviation workers where appropriately to transition into the green economy is going to be a really useful thing for the government to look at going forward. And then finally, as we've said a few times, I think more focus probably on aviation's non-CO2 impacts.
Are there examples from abroad about sort of measures that other governments have taken that the UK can look at for inspiration?
I think it has to be said that there's no country that we're aware of that's really got on top of this issue. There are some European countries starting to have a go. So France, for example, is considering banning domestic flights where there's a good rail alternative. They recently announced they were dropping plans for expansion of Charles de Gaulle Airport for climate reasons. Austria, we understand, is considering a minimum airfare to help give a better kind of price signal about flying. But really, there's lots of space here for innovation, I would say.
But you see some of those measures, for example, banning domestic flights where there's alternatives, thinking about whether airport expansion is compatible with net zero. Are those measures that you think the UK should also be looking to replicate at home?
The biggest factor in terms of determining the emissions from your flight is how far you go. So that actually domestic flights generate a very small proportion of total emissions. It's really the long-haul flights that are the most problematic. I think it's certainly worth us thinking about moving from, you know, domestic flying to rail, where you can do that as being a good move for the environment. But I think really we need to be talking about destination shift for flying if we want to have a significant impact on emissions. So that's going to have to be part of a more meaningful conversation, I think, going forward.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Green Alliance podcast. Keep checking in as we will continue to bring you specialist interviews and highlights from our events. You can subscribe to the Green Alliance podcast on your favorite podcast app, and you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Green Alliance UK.